It is a pleasure for me to be here with you this morning. As I mentioned to the children, I'm from Minnesota, but only these past 10 years. Prior to that, I lived in Virginia. I grew up in Northern Virginia. I went to James Madison University. My brother went to William & Mary. And so it is so nice to be back here in the Old Dominion. So, and people have been apologizing for the weather, but let me know, this is May weather in Minnesota. So it feels good to me. The guest on The Daily Show was former Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. He and host Jon Stewart were having a fun, witty repartee. A viewer could tell that they felt amicably toward one another. After a commercial break, Stewart started in on a new area of conversation. "Respectfully speaking," he said, "the one thing I guess I don't understand about social conservatives, the gay marriage issue and why conservatives are against it." Huckabee then proceeded to list some of the reasons why he's against gay marriage. "Because the institution of marriage has been around for 5,000 years," he said. He named some religious reasons as well. He even mentioned anatomical issues and then went to the wisdom of the voters who passed Proposition 8 in California, though they apparently did not have enough wisdom to vote for him. Stewart had a response to every concern that Huckabee brought forth, and Huckabee would simply seem to disregard this response and give a new reason for why he was against it. It was fascinating to watch this respectful conversation between a devout conservative and a staunch liberal. Fascinating in part because it seemed as though they were speaking completely different languages, that they really didn't understand each other at all. According to Jonathan Haidt and Jesse Graham, both from the psychology department of the University of Virginia, this was indeed the case, that both Stewart and Huckabee were responding to the issue in very different ways. Haidt and Graham are the pioneers of a new way of understanding how different systems of our intuition have evolved over time and given rise to psychological foundations for morality. Called moral foundations theory, Haidt and Graham liken these five systems, these foundations, to a taste bud, in that they produce an affective reaction of liking or disliking when certain stimuli are presented. Just as some people have a preference for spicy food and others for sweet or for sour, each person has a personal preference for certain societal patterns. Haidt and Graham explain that these five systems lie underneath our rational minds, which we then often use to explain what is, at its core, an intuitive response. Just as one does not consciously choose to prefer spicy food or sweet or sour food, one does not consciously choose how to respond to these various foundations. Let's walk briefly through each of these five systems. Consider this first scenario. You have a young child and flu season is coming. You can choose to give your child a flu shot and have your child hate you for a month because of it, which is what happened with my children. But none of the kids here, I'm sure. Or you can choose to not give your child a flu shot and maybe risk your child getting the flu with all its physical and emotional issues. This scenario addresses the first foundation in moral foundations theory called harm care. This first foundation is related to our evolution as mammals with attachment systems and an ability to feel and dislike the pain of others. It underlies virtues of kindness, gentleness, and nurturance. How relevant is it for you when you're making decisions about whether something is right or wrong? How relevant is it for you whether or not someone was harmed? This is the first foundation of moral foundations theory, the harm care foundation. Another scenario. You find out that a punishment has been applied inconsistently to different groups of people by one particular judge in your city. How do you feel or react? This addresses the second foundation in moral foundations theory called fairness reciprocity. This foundation is related to the evolutionary process called reciprocal altruism, that is, when one person provides a benefit to the other without expecting any immediate payment or compensation, but in which there is an understanding that the act of altruism would be reciprocated if the situation were later reversed. This is where ideas of justice, rights, and autonomy originate. How important is it for you when determining right from wrong, whether or not someone acted unfairly? This is the second moral foundation, that of fairness reciprocity. Now consider this. You're traveling in a foreign nation, riding one of their lovely public transportation systems. You hear the person in front of you say something derogatory about your country, something that you don't believe to be true. How do you feel or respond? Does your answer change if instead of your country, they were insulting people of your faith, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation? This third foundation is related to our history as tribal creatures able to form shifting coalitions to group ourselves. It's called the in-group loyalty foundation, and it underlies virtues of patriotism and self-sacrifice for the group, groups that may include your country, your community, your family. How relevant is it for you in determining right from wrong whether or not someone betrayed his or her group? This is the third foundation, the in-group loyalty foundation, which our intuitions use to help determine whether something is right or wrong. A scenario for the fourth foundation comes from a work situation. Your boss has decided not to pay the licensing fees for a piece of software the company uses, and in fact asks you to continue using it and installing it on other machines. You know that there are legal actions pending against people who have done exactly this. How do you respond? This fourth foundation is called authority respect, and is shaped by our primate history of hierarchical social interactions. Do you obey your boss? Do you obey the country? It underlies virtues of leadership and followership, including deference to legitimate authority and respect for traditions. When you're determining right from wrong, how relevant is it whether or not the people involved were of the same rank or rung of the societal ladder? This is the authority respect foundation of moral foundations theory. And finally, you attend a performance art piece in which the actors act like animals for 30 minutes, including crawling around naked and urinating on the stage. Did they cross any boundaries? Were they immoral to act in such a way? The fifth foundation is shaped by the psychology of disgust and contamination. This foundation, called purity sanctity, is found underneath religious and cultural notions of striving to live in an elevated, less carnal, more noble way. This foundation speaks to the idea that the body is a temple that can be desecrated by immoral activities or contaminants, an idea which the organic food movement is proving is not unique to religious traditions. This purity sanctity foundation assesses how important it is in determining right from wrong, whether or not someone did something that you found to be disgusting. So these are the five areas of moral foundations theory: harm care, fairness, reciprocity, in-group loyalty, authority respect, and purity sanctity. Haight and Graham, who developed this theory based on existing morality theory combined with data from thousands of people from across the world, liken these five foundations to a stereographic equalizer. Do they still have those? Everybody's with iPods now. You don't have one on an iPod, but you know they go up and down. Similar to the guy sitting next to you in traffic whose bass is pounding so loud you feel it in your car with all the windows rolled up, some people have different channels, different foundations tuned to high, whereas other people prefer various other channel settings. Getting back to The Daily Show, we can see that Mike Huckabee has a different setting for his morality equalizer than Jon Stewart does. There's Huckabee sitting in his car, happily listening to what he hears as a complex musical ensemble. He has it turned all the way up. And sitting in the car next to him is Jon Stewart, who can hear only the bass vibrating its way through his vehicle. When it seems like they are talking across each other, it turns out they are. Now here is where it gets really interesting and begins to yield some practical applications. It turns out, generally speaking, that political liberals primarily use two channels on their morality equalizer: the Harm Care Foundation and the Fairness Reciprocity Foundation. The other three channels may register, but at very low levels in comparison with these two primary means of determining right from wrong. Political conservatives, on the other hand, have all five of these channels active and all tuned up high. The politically conservative system for determining right from wrong, with its five different foundations, is complex and nuanced. Political conservatives have moral concerns that liberals typically either don't recognize or tend to minimize. Now, political conservatives or political liberals among you may be wondering, what makes in-group loyalty, authority, respect, and purity, sanctity, what makes these moral foundations and not xenophobic characteristics? Obviously, you are asking. The answer Haight gives is simple: social entropy. Without these other three foundations, cooperation in society tends to decay. Without authority, respect, without in-group loyalty, without purity, sanctity, society would tend to go into entropy. To solve cooperative problems, it's not enough to appeal to a good conscience. It's necessary for there to be some repercussion for not appealing, for not cooperating. This devolution of society is something the political conservatives fear very deeply. They're willing to achieve and maintain order, even though it may cost those who are at the bottom of society. Political liberals, on the other hand, are willing to risk chaos and disorder in society in order to achieve justice for the weak and the oppressed. Now, with all this talk of political liberals and political conservatives, let me get in a quick caveat. Kurt Vonnegut wisely said that thanks to TV and for the convenience of television, you can only be one of two kinds of human beings, either a liberal or a conservative. Of course, the reality is that we are all over the spectrum. And while we may be liberal in some areas of our life, we may be conservative in others. But hyperbole can be useful. Looking at the extremes can be helpful, particularly when we look at how our liberal religious tradition, which is blessed to have both political liberals and political conservatives among us, so when we look at how our liberal religious tradition tends to approach social justice issues, let's look at civil marriage as an example. Institutionally, in regards to civil marriage, we're like Jon Stewart of The Daily Show. We keep banging the drums of fairness, reciprocity, and harm care. We say that civil marriage is a civil right. We liken the situation to that of interracial marriage, illegal in some states into the 70s. The Unitarian Universalist Association produced a video showing that we have opposed discrimination against gay, lesbian, and bisexual people for almost 40 years. And these are all true, and they are all well, and they are all good. But they are not enough. These arguments stem almost exclusively from the harm, care, and fairness, reciprocity foundations. They do not speak at all to the social entropy that many political conservatives fear. But if we want to affect change, the changing of hearts and the changing of minds as an institution, we need to address these other moral foundations as well as an institution. We need to address in-group loyalty, authority respect, and purity sanctity. Unitarian Universalist minister Davidson Lohr points out that the most successful liberal advances tend to wrap their expanded definitions in what sounds like conservative categories. For instance, when JFK proclaimed, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country," he was proclaiming a conservative idea. Yet he used it to effect significant social liberal transformations in our society. When the socially liberal agenda is advanced, it is because the liberals have addressed these other intuitive systems at work in the lives of conservatives. Again, this is an exaggeration of the extremes. But as we are blessed with both political liberals and conservatives in our congregations, I can't help but wonder how our message might broaden if more voices were brought to the table. We can't just charge in and expect to change people's minds. However, if our message was able to be heard and understood, no matter what channels a person's morality equalizer is set to, we may begin to address these social entropy fears. Remember, Haight and Graham identified these moral foundations as intuitive, something that happens at an instinctive level before reason and rationality come into play. Indeed, the future may show that people are biologically predisposed, not destined, but predisposed towards either liberalism or conservatism. Though most of us tend to think that we're right and that our way is what's best for society, neither liberal nor conservative nor anywhere in between is always right, nor is anyone always wrong. And so it becomes essential that our messages be accessible at each of these five moral foundations, whether that message is about one specific social justice issue, such as civil marriage, or even when we are talking about our faith more generally. For instance, if we are talking to a religiously conservative coworker or family member. rather than repeating the same things over and over in increasing volume as if we think they're deaf, it doesn't work. We need to be clear enough so that no matter what pitch a person is listening to, they will hear and be unafraid. We need to be using each of these channels, each in as many ways as we can, in order to make our important messages heard and understood. For instance, when we are talking about what Unitarian Universalists believe, we might choose to address the Purity Sanctity Foundation by using the language of our Universalist forebears, that we are all God's children. We are all loved, and in the eyes of love, no one is an abomination. We are all sacred. We might address the Authority Respect Foundation by talking about love as the ultimate authority to which we are all answerable. Love as the beginning and the end. Love as the guiding force in how we treat one another. Which leads to how we might address the Loyalty In-Group Foundation, that we are loyal to the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part, and as such, we work for the betterment of others in the web, particularly those less fortunate than ourselves. These are many of the same words we would usually use to describe our faith, but they are set at a slightly different pitch. When we learn to listen to and communicate with different moral settings than what we usually prefer, 2 or 5, 5 or 2, 3, it doesn't matter, we may just find that we can appreciate how a different tuning sounds. May we, in our reaching out to one another, better understand ourselves and this world that we live in, and may our understanding bring with it compassion. Blessed be.